Easter round's maybe over, but the fun is just getting started as we look forward to Gather Round. New Hawk Jack Ginnivan will face his premiership teammates for the first time as debate around his high tackle numbers continues to rage. We'll talk to Josh Barnes on that topic coming up. And are the Bombers actually any good? Well, that's the question Ed Burke is going to attempt to answer. All right, let's get into it, shall we? Get set for the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. First time on the Herald Sun Footy Podcast this year, we're joined by Ed Burke. G'day, Ed.
Morning, Andy. How are you?
Well, so they're an intriguing mix of conundrums, the Essendon Bombers. You're taking a look at whether they've finally sort of hit their straps.
Yeah, the Bombers, are they good? An investigation. I've been following them closely early this season, and it's really interesting how much they've sort of changed their shape. They seem to have really pegged down the fundamentals of their game, and we've heard a bit of talk the last couple of weeks about the Essendon edge, and we had Tom Papley bite back at the Bombers for their aggression. But what we've really seen is that their clearance game and their general strength around the stoppages has just exponentially increased on last season. Clearances, they've gone from 12th to 1st on differential early this season. Centre clearance is the same, 12th to 1st. And points from stoppages, they're the second-ranked team in the AFL. They were 16th last season. So Brad Scott has given that credit to the midfield assistant coaches, Brent Stanton and Daniel Gian-Syracuse. But he says they haven't ticked the box yet, but it's a really strong starting point. Obviously, they've still got other issues in their game. They really struggled to defend against Sydney, just defend the whole ground against really good ball users. But it's very promising how much they've lifted on the inside.
And on the weekend, we saw, the Saints got the jump, but then the Bombers really just systematically pegged them back and ended up with a relatively sort of comfortable win. You know, it didn't seem particularly in doubt. Any idea of whether the recruitment of veteran champion Todd Goldstein has had a bit to play with those centre clearances?
Well, I think it's interesting that they've brought Sam Draper back in and he's immediately become the number one ruck again. Yep. They've liked Goldstein more as a forward. And Draper had a real influence, especially in the second half. He had three clearances, three inside 50s. The Bombers smashed St Kilda by 13 in the clearances in the second half. And maybe what Goldstein has done is it's allowed them to not be as affected by the absence of Peter Wright. He'll be gone until Anzac Day. It was clear that St Kilda were struggling without what Max King brings to their structure. But the Bombers might be able to cover for Wright with this new approach they've got with their tools.
It's interesting. They're kind of showing that traditional structure of a football team of a dominant ruck and a strong key forward is an important, they're very important elements, and obviously key backs with Ben McKay coming into the team this year. Maybe they've been able to sort of strengthen that spine as well, helps the midfield and helps that sort of, you know, the entry inside 50. So they've got a really challenging next 3 weeks. I guess that will show us coming into Anzac Day, where they sit, you know, and if they are the real deal.
Yeah, we'll know for sure in a month whether the Bombers are legitimate. They've got two trips to Adelaide in the next 3 weeks. So after Port on Friday, the Bulldogs at Marvel, and then they're back to play the Crows, which will be a tricky time to get the Crows, currently winless and really under the pump, and then Collingwood on Anzac Day. So in 4 weeks' time, we'll probably know that they're one of only five teams who play West Coast twice. That will help them a little bit, but it only goes so far.
Yeah.
So the next 4 weeks are really important to their finals chances.
But as we all know and always know, that the talk about Essendon playing finals, winning finals, all that never goes away. So they're really, you know, they've had a lot of time. Brad Scott now in his second year as coach. The time is now for them to show something to their fans who are sort of, desperate for some success in finals.
It's one thing for all the talk about this new inside game that they've discovered and a bit more of a finals DNA with the Essendon edge. Brad Scott's been playing down expectations all summer, and he did it again in his press conference yesterday. He was talking about watching the Port Adelaide Melbourne game last week and how he was more concerned than watching on in awe by what Port Adelaide had produced. He thought it was a really high quality game, so he's still playing the expectations game a bit. Maybe just trying to take the heat off his players, but it's quite curious because the start to the season has been really promising.
So in terms of, you know, that the hole that, say, Goldstein fills that Wright created, you know, with the suspension there. So I'm guessing it also makes them look a bit different as well for oppositions because they're different players. You know, I'd say Goldstein plays slightly closer to goal. right, you know, he has that booming kick that he can sort of take marks outside 50. And so does that create, I guess, does it create sort of an unknown for opposition teams?
I think not a lot of teams. Todd Goldstein has always played on his own, basically, in the ruck North Melbourne. But even last season, Alistair Clarkson was very unwilling to play him alongside Tristan Sherry. Not a lot of teams have had to deal with him playing as a deep forward. Mm. And he's got some pretty handy skills. He's never really played there much during his career. He had a big haul of goals once in Tasmania that North Melbourne fans will remember. But yeah, I think it is a bit of a challenge, and it makes them move the ball differently. And they've got two very mobile targets in Kyle Langford and Jake Stringer that they're probably now looking to more without Peter Wright there. So it'll be interesting to see how they adjust when Wright actually comes back.
And how have their big recruits of the off-season shaped up, other than Goldstein? There's Mackay down back and Gresham from St Kilda as well. Have they sort of added something to the mix for Brad Scott?
I think Ben Mackay has been really solid so far. He's working his way into it. Probably hasn't had a huge test yet in terms of a monster key forward to play on. And Xavier Dersma on a wing, we've started to see a bit more from him now. It's taken him a couple of weeks just to settle into the system, but mm-hmm. he had 23 disposals against the Saints and really started to get going.
Well, Ben Mackay will have Charlie Dixon this week, so that'll be the test.
Mm.
Hey, Ed, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Eddie.
I'm Andrew Rule, the host of the podcast A Life in Crimes. Here are some of the things that we've been talking about the last few weeks. The brutal truth is that when you start looking at it, they always kill or injure a lot more than each other.
The professional hitman used to be a professional hitman.
Evil strikes in all forms, but particularly as stupidity. Life and Crimes is available wherever you get your podcasts.
And fresh off an attempt to usurp my position here as host of the Herald Sun Footy podcast, Josh Barnes. G'day, Josh.
I think I'm sitting in the wrong seat here, Andy. I'm supposed to be the host now, aren't I?
You're very welcome to it, mate, because it was a stellar breakout performance, I reckon. It was almost the demons against Port at the Adelaide Oval. It could be the making of your football season. You could be headed for a premiership.
Well, just like the Demons welcoming back Stephen May, we'll let our superstar take over.
You compliment me too much. Josh, you were in and around the Jack Ginnivan thing all day on Tuesday, and along with Sam Landsberger and Mark Robinson, sort of spelt out all of the issues around the Jack Ginnivan high tackle. I mean, it feels like we've been talking about this for 3 years. You know, did he get too many in 2022? Did he get not enough in 2023? And how did it all play out against Geelong on Monday? Give us the lowdown.
Does it ever end with Jack, does it? It's always something, isn't it, with him? The controversy is around many, many things, and it will continue on with him all week, I'm sure. Famously, at the end of this week, he's going to be playing Collingwood for the first time on Sunday. And we'll see how the Collingwood fans react to him trying to draw some free kicks, which I'm sure he will keep in his game. I spoke to James Sicily after the match on Monday about his style, and the skipper, who he's drawn a couple free kicks in the past. He said Jack should keep playing his own way. He's doing the right thing. He's winning the ball, and he's testing the tackler. And he's testing the umpires and the AFL for sure. The AFL on Tuesday said they'd made mistakes on Monday, that he should have got more free kicks than he did. There were four clear incidents. Three of them were at ground level. One was a marking contest. Marking contest was an obvious free kick that was missed. And the ground level ones, I think two out of three probably should have been free kicks. The other one was probably a 50-50. Each of those would have been shots at goal. And that's the difference that's missing in his game, I think, is that you spoke about in 2022, he probably got too many high free kicks. He was obviously in the news there. He led the league with 21 high free kicks in 2022, and he kicked 40 goals in 23 matches that year. Broke out, looked like he was going to be a superstar small forward. He's kicked 15 goals in 17 games since then, and he's had four free kicks last year and one free kick this year for high contact. So he's missing a lot of free kicks there that he formerly got, and he's missing a lot of goals. So he has to work on that and find ways to score more goals, and the umpires probably have to pay more free kicks at the same time.
But he can't rely on free kicks as a delivery method for his goals. Yeah, you're right. He needs to work on his other craft. But so we had Sam Landsberger for the defense, and yep. Mark Robinson for the prosecution. You know, Sam took the argument that he's been conned, man. He said he's not a con man, he's been conned, man. and Robbo was on the other side that he does draw the free kicks and basically it's his fault that he's not getting them because the umpires have wised up to it. It is very much, you know, like there are other players who draw free kicks. You know,
yeah.
Every time you play against an opposition, your team plays against an opposition, you know, you see players who play for them, but it's always been part of the game.
Yeah, and it's particularly been part of the game. I think my argument for Jack Ginnivan is that he's clearly getting different treatment to everybody else. And you can see the numbers that we dug up from Champion Data in the paper on Wednesday spell that out, that players consistently get these high free kicks and he doesn't. John Noble is a clear example of that for Collingwood. He was third in 2022 with 16 high free kicks and he was first in 2023 with 18 high free kicks. There was a change in how they interpret high free kicks in mid-2022. They were making it clear that if you lead with your head and you duck your shoulder into the player and raise that arm, we're not going to pay free kicks anymore to you. And that's affected Ginnivan, but it hasn't affected Noble in any way. Errol Goulden, again, ranked in the top four both years. He's not renowned as a ducker, but he's still getting the same high free kicks.
Mm.
But Jack Ginnivan simply isn't. And on Monday, it was pretty clear. One of the examples where Max Holmes wrapped Ginnivan up and held him in a headlock for a few seconds, the ball spilled out and his teammate Dylan Moore picked it up and he got a high free kick for exactly the same incident.
Really?
2 seconds later. Hawthorn bungled the play and took advantage and they didn't get a shot on goal, so the play wasn't stopped. But the whistle was blown for a high free kick 1 second after Ginnivan and he was still probably in a headlock at the time. So clearly he is getting different treatment to other players that have done this in the past and continue to do sort of these actions.
It also splits the football public because you look at heraldsun.com, the story that went online yesterday, there's a poll that went up. It's had almost 1,500 votes and they're essentially split down the middle. It's 47, he's getting caught high, 53% he's raising his arms. I mean, that is very much a, you know, it's almost a half-half. So it's not something that if they make a change, it's going to satisfy half the football watching public and it's going to, you know, disappoint the other half. So it's really a strange situation based on one small forward who's, you know, it's not like it's Dustin Martin or Jordan DeGoey. You know,
yeah.
Jack Ginnivan is a polarising player, but he is a, you know, he's a crumbing forward for a team that's 14th on the ladder or was last year. It's interesting you say that he's facing Collingwood this weekend because I was at the Melbourne Collingwood qualifying final last year and when he came on as the sub, I don't think I've heard a roar as loud as that. The Collingwood supporters absolutely adored Jack Ginnivan and then within 4 weeks he was gone. So it'll be really interesting to see the reception that he gets.
Yeah, it will be fascinating because we all remember that prelim final where he was sitting on the bench on the big screen and Sydney fans started booing him who probably don't know what the big sticks mean and they were still booing him on the big screen. So he has been, since that 2022 season, he's been in the headlines week after week and it'll be fascinating to see how the Collingwood fans treat him. He's a premiership player, but he didn't, it's still an awkward and messy exit coming out of Collingwood. He says that he left because of an exit meeting with Craig McRae about the races. And he didn't feel like that. He went to the races the day before the grand final. He didn't feel like he was being treated properly. He didn't have any Collingwood players reach out to him. He says post-season, while Hawthorn had 10 players texting him saying, "Why don't you come to Waverley?" So no Collingwood players, according to Ginnivan, were trying to keep him. What that says and whether that's true or not, that's all still up in the air. And what we'll see from him on the field, if he draws a high free kick early in the game, what are Collingwood fans going to do at Adelaide Oval?
Back in the day, there would be an umpire, you know, whether it'd be one of the better known umpires would, just for show, he'd pick out a free kick 5 metres from goal in front of the Paulsford stand where the Collingwood cheer squad are, and he'd blow the whistle and is Jack Ginnivan going to be ping-holding the ball? And he would run in from 50 metres away and then he'd just do the tap on the shoulder and the crowd would go wild. We need some theatre like that when it surrounds Jack Ginnivan because he brings a lot of theatre himself.
Yeah, it is a shame a little bit that this is gather round, isn't it? It's not at the MCG in front of 70,000 Collingwood fans. And I think it speaks a little bit to not just the confusion around Ginnivan as a player, but the confusion around the rules as well that I want to touch on, that I think he should be getting more free kicks, but I don't think free kicks should be being paid, if that makes sense, Andy. I think players should be being taught as much as possible to not lead with your head, and high free kicks should be taken out of the game as much as possible. And that particularly players that pick up the ball and put their head back down into traffic or into players, and they're basically headbutting players, they're getting rewarded for that, and that's how you injure your neck and do serious damage to yourself. So I think he should be getting more free kicks just because of the way everybody else is being umpired. But at the same time, everybody else should be umpired differently. And there has been a reduction in free kicks across the board. It's dropped about 10% since 2022 compared to 2023. So they are trying to get it out of the game, but you can't have players being caught in headlocks and getting lost. And I think he has been quite good at Hawthorn so far. His first three games have been pretty good. He was arguably their best player in round one against Essendon, but he's still not kicking a lot of goals, and that might just come down to not getting the whistle.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, if he's kicking goals when he's getting lots of free kicks in 22 and not so much now, we'll just have to wait and see if, you know, the fact that it's in the conversation will mean that umpires subconsciously will be looking out for him a bit more, and maybe they're being told, you know, don't treat him as harshly as you have been, and, you know, we'll, the proof will be in the pudding as the season goes on, because, you know, the AFL's on notice. We've seen there are free kicks that should have been paid, and they've admitted there are. So, you know, watch this space.
Andy, before I go, are you a booer? Are you, or do you stay away from that sort of stuff?
I try and stay away from booing. I'm on the record as a very passionate Melbourne supporter, and I must admit I did boo Braden Maynard last year in that qualifying final. I'm not proud of it.
Well, that's reasonable, I think.
But no, I try and not boo. I think booing is it's a bit of an ugly blight on the game. Yeah.
Yeah, I like booing in the right circumstances, obviously. There are some circumstances we've seen in AFL in the last decade or so that have been horrific. But I think if it's a player that has done something specifically against your team in the past or on that day, like the Maynard example, they deserve a boo. And it makes footy better, I think. It gets the crowd involved, gets a bit of action in there. Some players step up under the pressure like that and they enjoy it. Some players obviously don't, but I enjoy it on game day. I think if it's in the right spirit, then booing's great.
Oh, I mean, I consider it maybe a slightly more gamesmanship or jeering. I think, you know, that seeing watching the Melbourne game on Saturday night where the crowd, Port Adelaide crowd, were obviously giving it to, I think, Ben Brown and then Bailey Fritch on the boundary line, you know, right in front of the supporters area, and they kicked goals, good goals from the boundary and gave it back a little bit. I mean, yeah, the bit of give and take's always a bit of fun. I don't know. I think that the Perth crowd got a bit of a reputation for booing everything over the last few years, not so much now, because they've got nothing to
do. They don't make much noise. There's nothing to cheer either.
Yeah, exactly. But, it's an interesting one. I think it's got to be in the right spirit.
Yeah, definitely. I think you got to try and invite the crowd into the game a little bit along those lines, as you said, as long as it's in the right spirit. And the Hawthorn fans in particular are outstanding after the Lightning delay on Monday when they kicked the first couple of goals after we waited 42 minutes to get back on the field and it was pouring rain. They were very loud and very into it. So
it
was very impressive.
Oh, well done. Hey, Barnsley, you were great last week.
What about this week?
You were fantastic this week. But as host last week, you were great. And keep that subs fest on, mate, because you might be needed again. Thanks for your time.
I'll do my best. Thanks, Andy.
Well, that'll probably do us for this Gather Round edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. I'm Andy Belairs, and my thanks to Josh Barnes and Ed Burke for joining me today. The D's and Crows kickstart footy in Adelaide on Thursday, and footy continues in the City of Churches all weekend. So keep an eye out for our Supercoach-themed blogs for each game, analysis of the games every morning, and of course, Robbo's can't-miss tackle on Sunday afternoon. I'll catch you next week.